Chris Moore-Eastman is an endocrinologist, which means that he's a doctor who specializes in conditions caused by hormones. And in particular, he's done a lot of work on iodine deficiency disorders. Now, iodine is an essential micronutrient, which is needed to make thyroid hormones. I'd taken iodine supplements before, but I hadn't really understood before I wrote this book why they were so important. And a person only needs a teaspoonful of iodine over the course of their whole lifetime. But we need to get that in small doses at regular intervals. And if people don't get this, it can disrupt the production of thyroid hormones and cause a lot of health problems. And it can also cause intellectual and physical disabilities, particularly if a person doesn't get enough iodine when they're pregnant. So Creswell is absolutely passionate about making sure that the scientific research that he does is used to help people and to reduce people's suffering. And he's worked with governments and aid agencies to eliminate iodine deficiency in Australia and overseas. And this work has helped millions of people to live their best lives. Hearing about Creswell's work, I was very impressed by the impact that he's had. And for this book, I interviewed him via Zoom and telephone calls. It was during the pandemic, and we also live in different cities, so we've never actually been in the same room. And it was a new experience for both of us because I'd never written a biography before and Chris had never been the subject of one. By the late 1990s, it was clear that some areas in China were lagging in getting rid of iodine deficiency disorders. For example, in Tibet, goiters were still common and lots of Tibetan children were born with brain damage due to their mother's iodine-deficient diets. The Chinese government were impressed with Krez's work, so suggested that Krez and his team complete a survey to find out how bad the problem was in Tibet and then come up with a solution. That's how Krez found himself on a Chinese military aeroplane flying into a remote area of Tibet. They would land at the highest altitude airport in the world, Kwamdo Bumda, over 4,000 metres above sea level. As a pilot and lover of planes, Krez was excited to arrive at this unique airport. Initially, Krez had expected to travel by land, but this chartered flight saved days of travel, so there'd be more time to visit villages and collect information. He looked out the plane window at the brown mountains topped with snow, a blue river winding like a ribbon between them. Through the crackly speakers, the pilot made an announcement in Mandarin. Krez's guide leaned over and translated, "Landing soon, Professor Eastman. Thanks, Wang." Krez marvelled at the 5.5-kilometre runway as they landed. It was the longest runway in the world because planes need longer to speed up at high altitude, with the air being less dense. After the plane taxied back to the terminal, Krez picked up his bag and made his way to the plane's exit, noticing the flight crew were wearing oxygen masks. Krez was uneasy but tried to sound cheerful as he said goodbye to the crew. After only a few metres walking across the tarmac towards the airport terminal, Krez felt breathless. He put down his bag and took a few deep breaths. At high altitude, the air contains less oxygen, but Krez hadn't expected it would affect him this much. He was also still recovering from a stomach bug that he'd picked up a few days before. He was dehydrated and could feel a headache starting. He suddenly remembered what the Director General of Health for Tibet had said to him in a recent meeting. "You've done remarkable things, Professor Eastman, but this is going to be the most difficult project you've taken on. This will threaten your life." Krez had thought the man was exaggerating or trying to put him off. Now his warning seemed too real. Had he made a big mistake? Travelling by car to their accommodation, Krez felt worse. His head was aching and breathing was difficult, even though he was sitting still. When they arrived, Krez set himself up with an oxygen mask. It was Mother's Day in Australia, so he called his wife Annette by satellite phone. She sounded very far away. "You're a wonderful mother," Krez said, "and the most resilient person I know." He wanted to say more, but he was struggling for breath. "Are you sure you're okay?" Annette asked. He explained he was sick, but tried to be reassuring. "I'll be better in the morning." By nightfall, Krez had a bubbling sensation in his chest, which he knew meant fluid was coming from his blood vessels into his airways. His headache was the worst he'd ever had, as if hundreds of sharp knives were pressing against his skull. It was hard to think clearly, but he had to. He was the team leader, but also the only doctor, and they were hundreds of kilometres from the nearest hospital. No one was coming to save him. If he was going to live, he had to save himself.
And to discover what happened next, you'll have to read the book, Cresswell Eastman, The Man Who Saved a Million Brains.
Cresswell Eastman is an endocrinologist, which means that he's a doctor who specialises in conditions caused by hormones. And in particular, he's done a lot of work on iodine deficiency disorders. Now, iodine is an essential micronutrient, which is needed to make thyroid hormones. I'd taken iodine supplements before, but I hadn't really understood before I wrote this book why they were so important. And a person only needs a teaspoonful of iodine over the course of their whole lifetime. But we need to get that in small doses at regular intervals. And if people don't get this, it can disrupt the production of thyroid hormones and cause a lot of health problems. And it can also cause intellectual and physical disabilities, particularly if a person doesn't get enough iodine when they're pregnant. So Cresswell is absolutely passionate about making sure that the scientific research that he does is used to help people and to reduce people's suffering. And he's worked with governments and aid agencies to eliminate iodine deficiency in Australia and overseas. And this work has helped millions of people to live their best lives. Hearing about Cresswell's work, I was very impressed by the impact that he's had. And for this book, I interviewed him via Zoom and telephone calls. It was during the pandemic and we also live in different cities, so we've never actually been in the same room. And it was a new experience for both of us because I'd never written a biography before and Cres had never been the subject of one. By the late 1990s, it was clear that some areas in China were lagging in getting rid of iodine deficiency disorders. For example, in Tibet, goiters were still common and lots of Tibetan children were born with brain damage due to their mother's iodine deficient diets. The Chinese government were impressed with Cres's work, so suggested that Cres and his team complete a survey to find out how bad the problem was in Tibet and then come up with a solution. That's how Cres found himself on a Chinese military aeroplane flying into a remote area of Tibet. They would land at the highest altitude airport in the world, Kwamdo Bumda, over 4,000 metres above sea level. As a pilot and lover of planes, Cres was excited to arrive at this unique airport. Initially, Cres had expected to travel by land, but this chartered flight saved days of travel, so there'd be more time to visit villages and collect information. He looked out the plane window at the brown mountains topped with snow, a blue river winding like a ribbon between them. Through the crackly speakers, the pilot made an announcement in Mandarin. Cres's guide leaned over and translated, "Landing soon, Professor Eastman. Thanks, Wang." Cres marvelled at the 5.5-kilometre runway as they landed. It was the longest runway in the world because planes need longer to speed up at high altitude, with the air being less dense. After the plane taxied back to the terminal, Cres picked up his bag and made his way to the plane's exit, noticing the flight crew were wearing oxygen masks. Cres was uneasy, but tried to sound cheerful as he said goodbye to the crew. After only a few metres walking across the tarmac towards the airport terminal, Cres felt breathless. He put down his bag and took a few deep breaths. At high altitude, the air contains less oxygen, but Cres hadn't expected it would affect him this much. He was also still recovering from a stomach bug that he'd picked up a few days before. He was dehydrated and could feel a headache starting. He suddenly remembered what the Director General of Health for Tibet had said to him in a recent meeting. "You've done remarkable things, Professor Eastman, but this is going to be the most difficult project you've taken on. This will threaten your life." Cres had thought the man was exaggerating or trying to put him off. Now his warning seemed too real. Had he made a big mistake? Travelling by car to their accommodation, Cres felt worse. His head was aching and breathing was difficult, even though he was sitting still. When they arrived, Cres set himself up with an oxygen mask. It was Mother's Day in Australia, so he called his wife Annette by satellite phone. She sounded very far away. "You're a wonderful mother," Cres said, "and the most resilient person I know." He wanted to say more, but he was struggling for breath. "Are you sure you're okay?" Annette asked. He explained he was sick, but tried to be reassuring. "I'll be better in the morning." By nightfall, Cres had a bubbling sensation in his chest, which he knew meant fluid was coming from his blood vessels into his airways. His headache was the worst he'd ever had, as if hundreds of sharp knives were pressing against his skull. It was hard to think clearly, but he had to. He was the team leader, but also the only doctor, and they were hundreds of kilometres from the nearest hospital. No one was coming to save him. If he was going to live, he had to save himself.
And to discover what happened next, you'll have to read the book, Cresswell Eastman, The Man Who Saved a Million Brains.